Today on Wings, the last of our three-part retrospective on the United Nations Fourth World Conference on Women, held 25 years ago in China, August 30th through September 15th, 1995.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. About 15,000 women from around the world filled a stadium in Beijing August 30th for the opening of the NGO Forum, meaning Non-Governmental Organization Forum, of the Fourth World Conference on Women. China's first all-woman symphony orchestra, organized for the occasion, played works of Western and Chinese composers. There were vast displays of precision dancing by Chinese women and children. A blimp carried the conference keywords, equality, development, and peace. And of course there were speeches. The Venerable Helvi Sipilä of Finland, who had chaired the first World Conference on Women 20 years ago, discussed women's progress toward their goals.
We have made some quite outstanding steps forward in the field of equality. We have also started to understand that women are very important citizens in all our efforts for the development of the society. But, my dear friends, what have we women done for peace? To my mind, absolutely nothing. As we can see in our present world affairs, women are still only objects and not subjects. My dear friends and sisters, how long can we tolerate this situation?
Peace was one of the many topics of workshops, panels, and demonstrations during the 10-day NGO Forum, and a peace tent hosted discussions between women of warring nations. Overall, more than 30,000 people attended more than 1,000 activities, which filled most of the major public buildings in the Beijing suburb of Wairou, plus scores of booths, tents, and outdoor stages. Logistics were hampered by unseasonal rain, which moved U.S. First Lady Hillary Clinton's speech into a 1,500-seat auditorium, from which thousands were turned away.
This conference is about making sure that women, their children, their families have the opportunities for health care and education, for jobs and political participation, for lives free of violence, for basic legal protections, and yes, for internationally recognized human rights, no matter who they are or where they live. But when one looks at the progress that has been made throughout the world, it is clear that it is the NGOs who have charted real advances for women and children. It is the NGOs who have pressured governments and have led governments down the path to economic, social, and political progress, often in the face of overwhelming hostility. And you will be the key players in determining whether or not this conference goes beyond rhetoric and actually does something to improve the lives of women and families.
NGO forum participants, being non-governmental, were free to discuss and act on subjects diplomats at the official conference couldn't touch. For example, when the French detonated the first of a series of massive nuclear tests in the Pacific, there were spontaneous calls to boycott French products. Kamla Basin of India chaired a panel on globalization of the economy, where she taught the audience this song.
Pepsi Cola, Coca Cola, kisam kisam ka cola. Pepsi Cola, Coca Cola, kisam kisam ka cola. Par peene ka paani gayab jab bhi nal ka khola, kaisi neeti hai. It says there is Pepsi Cola, there is Coca Cola, all kinds of cola. But there's no water when I open the tap.
A youth talent night included young women from Western Sahara, whose song denounced the occupation of their country by Morocco. The number and variety of events at the conference far exceeded what was humanly possible to absorb. Many women said their favorite moments were personal conversations on the bus, or simply looking at the huge variety of women of different races, dress, and culture, who shared many of the same feminist principles.
I've been feeling something like what a drop of rain must feel when she falls into the sea, where she suddenly feels so big, so strong, so powerful, part of a vastness which connects from one continent to another.
For the Women's International News Gathering Service, I'm Frieda Worden.
Gonna keep on moving forward. Gonna keep on moving forward. Gonna keep on moving forward. Never turning back. Never turning back.
Julie Drizin of Pacifica caught another aspect of the conference in her story on the disabled women at the NGO forum.
No braille, no tape for the blind. There are no ramps. This ramp is broken. This woman in the wheelchair just very almost tipped over, not even 5 minutes ago. No one cares. Women must understand that disabled women are women too. We are part of the women's community. Please talk to your sisters from around the world who are here. Please understand that we are women. We are women. We are women. We are women. We are women.
1 year ago, disability rights activists wrote to conference organizers to explain their specific needs in order to fully participate in this historic event. But the NGO forum and the Chinese organizing committee have not come through. Sual de Marco is from Nicaragua. She's in a wheelchair, and she's angry that disabled women have been marginalized and excluded once again.
Estamos exigiendo un derecho como mujeres.
This is a right like a women.
Iguales a ustedes.
Just like you.
Nosotras somos mujeres iguales.
We are women like you.
Sentimos, pensamos.
We feel, we think.
La diferencia es no ver, no caminar y no hablar.
The only difference is that we don't see, or we don't walk, or we don't talk.
Pero nosotras tenemos que estar aquí con los mismos derechos.
But we, like you, have the same rights.
Exigimos acceso.
We want access.
The conference site is a nightmare for these women. Most buildings lack elevators or ramps, and workshops, even the workshops on disability rights issues, are scheduled on the second, third, and fourth floors. There are very few wheelchair-accessible buses, and the organizers refuse to provide sign language interpretation. So Florence Lusaka of Uganda has had to rely on a friend to sign and speak for her, but that friend is in a wheelchair.
Here I am. I came with no interpreter. I've lost all the money I've spent to come here because I came without an interpreter. At the disability tent, You know, the disabled women using chairs, they couldn't get in. My interpreter right here can't even get up this ramp. Please, please, change. Give us disabled our rights. UN, please give us our rights.
Disability rights activists say that hundreds of millions of women worldwide are disabled, and 90% of them will never be employed. Tasneem Sadiq of Bangladesh says any woman is a candidate to become disabled at some point in her life. So the women's movement must integrate disabled women and their issues into the larger agenda. Disabled girls worldwide are denied access to education, and women with disabilities, whether they live at home or in institutions, are disproportionately targets of physical and sexual abuse. Robin Foster of Boston is a trained guide for the blind. She's here helping her friend get around a site that's filled with cracked tiles, potholes, narrow passageways, and throngs of people. She says the condition of the facilities here also raises questions about disabled people in China.
Walking through the Beijing in Huairu, I have not seen one single disabled Chinese person, not one. And I find that in one quarter of the world's population, there's got to be disabled people here. There has to be.
Since their demonstration, organizers have put more ramps on buildings and assigned volunteers to help disabled women get around the site. But as advocates of visibility, accessibility, and opportunity for the disabled, some of these women still want to know where the Chinese disabled people are. This is Julie Drizin reporting from the International Women's Conference in Huairou, China.
Special thanks to Shapu Alafante of KPFA in Berkeley, Susan Mooney of IGCS Women's Net, and Helene Rosenbluth for production help on this piece.
The women just credited are the ones who made it possible for the Pacifica Radio Network to receive daily news stories from the non-governmental forum in Huairou, in defiance of a Chinese ban on reporters there. The workaround was to visit the email demonstration facility that the Chinese had given a permit and attach audio files to emails. The governmental conference held in far-off Beijing had lots of reporters, of course, but they weren't necessarily covering the deeper stories, like the gender divide around the issue of nuclear disarmament. Kimberly Fraser Booth, an educator activist, conducted this interview with Nafisa Hoodboy, a member of Pakistan's official delegation.
It was mainly men who were speaking on this issue, and it was men who were saying that the women's conference had nothing to do with disarmament. But it was women who were talking for the elimination of all nuclear weapons, and women who were urging disarmament and a ban on nuclear testing. Now, the men kept saying that these issues were just going too far, that there was really no relationship between nuclear weapons and a women's conference. But the women tried to point out that they had always been in the forefront of the peace struggle. So finally, after a lot of pushing, the participants agreed to a gradual elimination of all nuclear weapons. The original resolution was watered down.
Were there any women who were more conservative on the issue who wanted to keep arms?
I would say that not all women were radical on this issue, although more women tended to be radical. But yes, I believe that women coming from the larger nations, you know, like, for example, the United States and some of the European Union nations, tended to be a little more conservative and tended to go along with their nation's position against the elimination of nuclear weapons.
On Wings, you are listening to a retrospective on the 25th anniversary of the fourth and last United Nations World Conference on Women, held in China in 1995. The formal part of the conference in Beijing held mostly closed sessions to negotiate consensus among official delegations. The non-governmental forum in Huairou was open to all who could fit in a given space. Here's a sample from the big auditorium, where translation headsets could also be tapped for recording.
Thank you very much. My name is Judy Rebick. You'll forgive me if I'm a little rough here, because I just got asked to do this 10 minutes ago. I'm the former president of the National Action Committee on the Status of Women in Canada, which is Canada's largest women's group. Today, our topic is approaches to governance, including questions of citizenship and political participation. Each of our speakers will speak for about 15 or 20 minutes, and then we want you to participate. And we have three mics up at the front, one here, and one there. And there's also people who will be circulating in the audience with mics. And what we'll do is we'll take questions or comments. We'd ask you to keep your questions or comments to about a minute and a half.
Can you speak slower?
To about a minute and a half, so that everyone can who wants to participate gets an opportunity to do so. And we'll try and take turns by region. Now, the topic approaches to governance, including questions of citizenship and political participation. What we're talking about now is no longer simply getting more women in positions of political power, although we still have a struggle to continue to do that. We're talking about once we're there, once we're in positions of influence, what are we going to do with those positions of influence? In Canada, an Aboriginal woman leader there said, "Women who climb the ladder of success, if they pull the ladder up after them, they don't do very much good for other women." And I think what we're talking about here is how women who have managed to get in positions of influence, whether that's in political society or civil society, use that influence not only to bring other women along with them, but most important, to transform those institutions which were built by men for men. And to transform those institutions to reflect the values of the women's movement, of what I call feminism. And this is an incredibly difficult struggle. We have a tremendously rich experience around the world in this struggle. We've been at it for a long time now. And what we know, and I think one of the reasons why the topic is what it is that simply working inside the traditional political institutions, you cannot achieve this. It's a combination of women working inside those institutions and the women's movement and women in other social movements in civil society that can make the political changes that we see. And when we in the women's movement talk about politics, electoral politics are only part of what we're talking about. We're talking about the movements of people for social change, and that these movements are as important part of the process of transformation toward equality and peace as the formal political institutions are. And so we have on our panel today three, and we hope four women, if our fourth speaker is able to attend, who have a tremendous variety of experiences on these issues. And I think what I'm going to do is introduce the first one, who we're very honored to have with us today, Cheryl Carolus. She is one of the highest ranking women office officials, in fact, one of the highest ranking officials of the ANC in Africa, South Africa. She is also one of the few high-ranking officials who refused an office in the government in order to work in civil society and with movements of people. She's a longtime member of the ANC who remained in South Africa, which means she spent a lot of time in South African prisons. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to Cheryl Carolus.
Thank you very much. I want to do something. The language might not be understood by all of you. There are enough women from home to understand it, but I will explain it afterwards. Amandla. And it's Amandla, and that means the power, Awetu, is ours. And it's a slogan which has sustained us as South African people, as South African women, through the many difficult years of our struggle. It's an important slogan because it's something which we need to remember all the time in this new phase of our struggle, where we are trying to build a democracy, where we are trying to build a developmental state. It is important for us to remember what the source of transformation and change is in our country and in the world. And there are many attempts to get us to no longer use these slogans, for us to make ourselves respectable. But it's very hard because as South Africans, we understand the value of not being too respectable.
The official result of the UN's Fourth World Conference on Women is a document called the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action. The document sets out responsibilities for governments, the private sector, and civil society to take strategic action to remedy women's inequality and needs in 12 critical areas of concern. These are poverty, education and training, health and related issues, violence against women, armed conflict, the economy, power and decision-making, institutional mechanisms for advancement, human rights, media, environment, and the girl child. The woman who headed the entire Fourth World Conference on Women was Gertrude Mangela from Tanzania. In 2004, Mangela would be elected the first president of the Pan-African Parliament. But immediately after the women's conference ended, she toured the world, exhorting those who could play a role in realizing the Beijing Platform for Action.
There are certain questions to throw to people who try to ridicule the platform. When I was in Beijing, I was interviewed by one of the religious media, and they asked me, you know, Mrs. Mangela, this document is anti-motherhood. I said, I am a mother of four. Would I sit down and write a document which is anti-motherhood? That is one point. Improving the health of women is anti-motherhood? Because that's what the document says about. Education for women is anti-motherhood? Economic power for women is anti-motherhood. Decision-making of women is anti-motherhood. Eradicating violence is anti-motherhood. I said, then this is something. What is motherhood? And one day when I was interviewed by CNN, they said, are you in the pocket of the Chinese? I said, I think so. But I'm also in the pocket of US because they formed my brain. So I'm saying, let's read the document. And if we read the document, we'll be able to disseminate the information. And I am craving, if I grow to be an old lady with grandchildren, that I'll be able to sit near the fire and tell stories about Beijing. And not only stories, but be able to say that if it were not Beijing, things would not be the way they are today. That's what old women tell, and that's what I wish to tell. So I want to say, this conference, which we say has been a very successful conference, will soon be wiped away if it's not protected by the women. The work we did, if you bring it to implementers and decision makers, in many places you deposit it, sometimes with decision makers, the same decision makers who have never been sympathetic to the cause of women. I'm giving it to the United Nations before I leave to go back home. But it's the same United Nations where the majority of women are just workers and the men are decision makers. So there must be something more to change the United Nations. So many heads of states talk about the reform of the United Nations. For me, it's a reform where I see the United Nations with an aspiration given in the charter that we the people But nowadays, you go into the General Assembly, it's not with the people, it's the men. And that is United Nations. I was in the government cabinet. Sometimes I used to sit alone. And I used to check myself if I have not turned into a tomboy. Because it's so easy when you are alone to turn into behaviors of men, because those are the ones you associate with. But I don't want to give a negative tone on gender issues, on men, women. The issue in Beijing was not an issue limited to men and women. We discussed issues which transcended the cultural, economic, political issues and limitations, religious limitations. We were able to even discuss things which have been taboos in normal discussions. We were able to agree. If you heard the mass media, they always gave a picture, we are not going to agree. I said, no. If we have a critical mass of women, women will never disagree. Because we share the same problems. The women of developing countries and developed countries, we have the same problems. Women in developed countries, when they are looking for the dishwashers, I'm looking for the water to wash the dishes. So that is not a conflict among us. It's just a way of bringing our energies together so that one day you can see that the women of the world, we can never be a homogeneous group, but we can use our efforts to put this world right, a world where resources are not equitably distributed. And it's not only among nations, it's even within families. These are the issues which we really brought up to discuss the issues across borders. It's only the United Nations as a body which can bring the world to address such a delicate issue without any inhibitions. That's why we have managed to get the Convention on Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. I want to appeal to you that the United States has not ratified this document. I am sure even those who have ratified have not implemented it. But ratification is one step forward. So if you can ask your government to ratify, you get into the list of ratification. We don't want to keep on pointing a finger at a big, powerful country like this.
Gertrude Mongella, head of the UN's Fourth World Conference on Women, was recorded in Kansas City, Missouri, in 1996 by Community Radio KKFI. As of 2020, the United States still has not ratified the United Nations Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. It was signed under the Carter administration in 1980. Thank you for listening to this retrospective about the UN's fourth and possibly its last World Conference on Women. To hear Wings shows again, email wings@wings.org. Thank you, dear friends, including contributors for the digitization of the WIRO recordings. Also Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose works can be found on the website gifteconomy.com. That's gift-economy.com. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.